Welcome to Creative Warriors, a community of purpose-driven entrepreneurs, creative thinkers in business doing what we are meant to do. I'm your host, Jeffrey Shaw. Hey, Warriors, I am very excited to have Scott Steinberg with us today. In a fast-moving world and increasingly competitive business climate, it's not possible to resist change and succeed. So we may as well learn to embrace change and how to do it right. Our guest, Scott Steinberg, is here to lead the way and offer us a training in courage so we can make the best of the opportunities before us. Welcome, Scott.
Hey, Jeff. How are you doing today?
Terrific. Let me tell everyone a little bit more about you. Scott is a best-selling business and lifestyle author and is one of the world's most celebrated professional speakers, futurists, and strategic innovation consultants, as seen in more than 600 outlets from CNN to the Wall Street Journal. His latest book, Make Change Work for You, 10 Ways to Future-Proof Yourself, Fearlessly Innovate, and Succeed Despite Uncertainty. The CEO of management consulting and market research firm TechSavvy Global, he helps clients create value and cultivate competitive advantage on the back of emerging innovations and trends. Among today's most quoted keynote speakers and trend experts, as seen by over 1 billion people worldwide, Scott's 10-plus year track record for accurately predicting business, consumer, and technology trends has made him a fixture in mainstream media. Today's number one ranked technology expert, according to Google, he's been a syndicated columnist on change and innovation for numerous outlets ranging from Fast Company, Inc. to Entrepreneur to Rolling Stone and the Huffington Post. But Scott, before you share your amazing insights with us, we want to know a little bit more about you personally. So share with us, if you will, what's the biggest change you've made in your life?
Geez, that's a good question. I think probably the biggest change, you could say it was either going from full-time public relations professional to freelance writer, or freelance writer to consultant, or consultant to speaker, or speaker to author. I mean, take your pick. They're all big changes. And I think what's interesting about them is the fact that not a lot of us always realize how important it is to be purposeful about some of these changes. And let me tell you, they can be terrifying. So when I went from a full-time job doing publicity for various high-tech firms to writing on the side and thinking about, could I make a full-time career out of it? I don't think there was a single person in my life who said, boy, that's a really good idea to leave that safe, stable job. So sometimes you just got to take the plunge, and it can be terrifying, but I think a big piece of how you make it work for you is taking small steps in a certain direction versus, let's say, a leap of faith. So, you know, a lot of people might hear that intro, for example, where I'd written for 600 plus outlets, but, you know, there was a time when I'd written for zero, and you can start on the side volunteering and posting things in different blogs and perhaps contributing to trade magazines, putting free articles up there, building your portfolio. You can find ways to bridge the gap, but yeah, I mean, it can be really scary at different moments.
And if you will share with us, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received, or a meaningful quote, or a favorite book that you would offer to inspire us, and why?
Well, I think the best piece of advice I ever got was figure it out. I know that sounds kind of contrite, but what's interesting is that, you know, a lot of us need to just think about the fact that we're going to get knocked down as we go about trying to pursue our goals and achieve our dreams in life. And it's very important to get back up. And I was speaking with Dave Stewart. He was one of the Eurythmics, if you remember them. They sang songs in the 80s. They were pop wonders with titles like Sweet Dreams Are Made of These, for example. Right. And he was telling me how, you know, if he didn't constantly reinvent himself and constantly pick himself up and keep going, that he would probably be playing a synthesizer on an 80s tour at the moment. I got to thinking about that, you know, and he was talking about how it's important to constantly reinvent yourself, constantly stay ahead of the curve. And he actually now produces videos. He creates music, soundtracks for different films. He does a number of online advertising productions. And, you know, a big piece of that is being willing to try new things, put yourself out there and fall back sometimes. And actually, there's a great quote that's essentially, the hardest thing on your laurels is resting on them. And so even if we've been successful before, it's important to always try and do things differently and extend your capabilities and be willing to push your comfort zone. And this is an important piece of advice to me because, you know, when I went about researching this book, Make Change Work for You, and I went about looking at what it takes to succeed, failure is a very big part of success, failing forward. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. Oftentimes, what holds us back from innovating innovating and trying new things and being more successful is that we're afraid. And failure is a big piece of this. So, but I think it's important to note for people that just because you may have failed once does not mean you are a failure per se. And in fact, the world's most successful companies and most successful people will oftentimes have to try different things in different directions, can't always be great at it, but they learn as they go and they keep improving. And that's the big piece of this. Just keep getting back up, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, keep moving forward. As long as you're persistent about it, then eventually you're going to find success. And it's really going to take a lot of effort. So if you haven't been successful overnight, I think it's important to note that you don't have to be.
I would agree with you. I think resiliency and recovery are two of the most necessary components of success, being successful, and often overlooked. So I think it's beautifully said. So if fear, and I would agree with you, fear, of course, holds a lot of us back from making changes in our life and in our business. So can you offer any suggestions or help to help us get past our fears of change?
Well, I think a big piece of it is to keep in mind that whether you do nothing or whether you make a change, you're still making a choice, right? The difference being that if you are actively choosing to make a change, then you are actively the one in control, because despite what we do, the world around us is constantly going to be changing. Customers' expectations are going to be changing. What it takes to stay up to date, stay relevant, that's going to be changing as well. Competitors are going to be trying new things. And if you don't push yourself and if you don't make a purposeful change and constantly be reassessing your strategies and thinking about more changes that you can make, it's pretty much the same as running in place, right? And that's not really a recipe for success. Even as competitors or other people are lapping you or the path in front of you is constantly changing, you've got to actively take control of the wheel and steer as well if that path moving forward is constantly shifting. So it really helps, I think, when it comes to fear, to be like, hey, you know, at the end of the day, not every choice is going to be comfortable for us, right? Some are going to produce a lot of anxiety. Some of them are going to be big shifts in strategy. Not all, right? Sometimes slight tweaks can be very powerful and help you brighten your future quite a bit as well. But really, I think when it comes down to being fearless, I don't think anybody actually is without fear, right? Even if you've been very successful, if you're a large corporation or a well-known leader, thought leader in your space, you know, ultimately, when it comes to overcoming fear, what we're talking about is a process of relentless practicality, constantly making small decisions, putting one foot forward in front of the other until you get from here to there. So really, when it comes down to overcoming some of that fear, being a little bit more courageous in life and business, it's just a process, again, of constantly moving forward. And fear wants you to freeze up and do nothing. And doing nothing while the world changes around you, that's probably a sure recipe for disaster, stepping outside of your comfort zone and doing something different.
Yeah. In fact, I love that you said that, because you mentioned in the book also that change does not have to be big, that a slight change in strategy or perspective can also make a big difference. So tell us more about that.
Well, yeah, I'll give you a certain example. So there was once upon a time a little airline called United, right? And these guys served several million passengers a year. And what would happen would be that you would have a lot of passengers when you had electrical storms hit or other unforeseen weather delays who would get stranded. They would constantly have to be rerouted. They would touch down at an airport to find out that their flights had been canceled. They'd have to wait around for hours. And it used to take United hundreds of hours, thousands of people to help correct a lot of these problems, get people back on track, the travelers. And then a passenger one time calls up their help desk and says, you know, if you realize that there's going to be a storm, there's going to be a delay, and I'm in flight, why didn't you just reroute me before I ever hit the ground, right? So a simple person at their IT desk, not necessarily a high-level executive, just an everyday employee, hears about this and says, well, you know, we could probably create an automated online rebooking system. And lo and behold, they create this software program, wasn't particularly complex, and it tracks passengers in flight, served a couple million people over the last year or so, and actually can rebook you in about 3 seconds. So you can literally hit the ground running if you have a delayed flight. Sometimes, you know, quite literally, depending on how far away the gate is. So, you know, a little slight shift like that, or great example, is Target, right? You know, these guys that got retail stores in just about every neighborhood. Well, the problem is, you know, at some point, you can only carpet bomb suburbia so much before you've crammed in too many stores. So actually, when Target wanted to grow its revenues, it didn't come up with some fancy new store concept. Really, it just came up with these city Target stores, which are like half-size versions of your typical Target. And you can go in there and you can pick up toilet paper, paper towels in smaller sizes. And these have been a huge hit for the company, one of its fastest growing initiatives. So it didn't take them really reinventing the wheel here to say, like, hey, let's just take smaller stores and put them in fast-growing urban areas. So there's a lot of examples.
Those are great examples. I love the United example. I also love the fact that the feedback came from a client, a passenger. I think that's brilliant.
Well, as I said, it's one of the funny things that I don't think a lot of people realize either is that when it comes to innovation, you start to study it a little bit and you see how the world's most successful companies stay top innovators. Their number one best source of new innovations and most successful ideas is simply listening to customers. It's that straightforward. It's unbelievable.
Sure, absolutely true. And without a doubt, as you said, in such a fast-changing world, that change, being willing to change, can give you a competitive advantage. So there's a way in which not changing can certainly put you at a competitive disadvantage. In fact, you cannot survive very long if you don't keep up with the changes. But what are some of the ways in which change can give you a competitive advantage?
Well, it can give you a competitive advantage if you're one of the first movers out of the gate and you're constantly looking three steps ahead, trying to plan for tomorrow today, right? So if you understand that the job market is changing, the skills that are going to be in demand, the software programs that employers are looking for proficiency in, these are constantly changing. Customer expectations are changing, like we said earlier. Well, guess what? You can plan around those, right? Instead of waiting for catastrophe to hit, you could actually get off your butt and say, well, I'm going to pick up some new skills. I'm going to go get some on-the-job training. I'm going to get experience with these software programs. I'm going to try some volunteer projects or side ventures at work that can help introduce me to new audiences or help me get a sense as to if I wanted to launch innovative new products in new markets or position them for new spaces. You know, how could I get ahead of the curve, right? And that's one of the nice parts about change. And in fact, fear in some ways, because fear can be a motivator, right? You can use it to say, uh-oh, you know, we got trouble ahead and you know, I don't know what I'm going to do about it. Or you can use it to say, oh, we got trouble ahead. Maybe I'm not up to speed, right, in these software packages, or maybe I'm not a great marketer, or maybe I don't know a thing about analytics. But you know what? I could go take courses on that, right? I could spend more time with some of the marketing and sales teams if I'm a product engineer and pick up some of these skills and insights. So really, change can help spur you to growth. I think that's really what we're talking about. And the other thing with change, too, is there's another great quote that's basically, you know, if you've always done it the same way, it's probably wrong. And that's funny in that even market leaders are constantly looking for new ways to do things better. You look at Apple, Amazon, Google, they're not simply relying on the same products over and over and over again. I mean, there's, gosh, you know, at least a dozen versions of the iPad out there, right? And God knows how many of the iPhone at this point. They're constantly trying to improve and think about, well, if it's not broken, what could we still fix, right? And so the more you can change, the faster you can do it, the more you're going to create competitive advantage because the competitors who are going to get comfortable want to keep doing same things over and over again. It's going to allow you to run circles around them. And actually, that's one of the funny things that you look at. When you start to study the psychology of people and organizations, what you realize is that both are hardwired. They want to do the same things over and over and over again, get in that comfortable groove. And if you can shake yourself out of that comfortable groove, you won't get into a rut.
You also make a great point of saying that change is not about being risk-free. It's about being risk-averse. So I think it would be really helpful for our community of warriors to explain the difference between risk-free and being risk-averse.
If you're trying to be risk-free, chances are you're probably not taking very many chances at work. You're probably not speaking up. You're probably not trying to step outside of your comfort zone. You're probably not trying new strategies. You're probably not learning a lot of different things. You're probably clocking in and out, probably not looking for ways that you could create competitive advantage. You're probably not looking for ways to get new skills, strategies, or insights that could serve you well in the future. So really it's important to constantly be looking for ways to move ahead and be more courageous in life and be more courageous in business. And really the whole process of risk-free versus risk-averse was really summed up quite nicely when I spoke to Phil Gordon. He's a professional poker player. He's also an entrepreneur. And he talks about the process of selective aggression. So if you ever look at professional poker players, they're going to make small probing little experiments with each hand as they go forward. And the only time you're ever going to see them push a lot of chips in the pot and they're certain they're going to win, that the odds are in their favor. They're selectively aggressive. So he talks about this in business in much the same way. So when he's developing a new app for his software publishing company, he'll oftentimes assign two people to explore a concept, to prototype it out, spend maybe $50,000 on it to see if it works, because he doesn't necessarily want to go all in and build a product that's huge, go to a public launch, spend $500,000 only to find out that he's made a mistake. Go all in only once you're certain you're going to succeed. Risk averse, like I was saying, but not risk free. You have to constantly be pushing forward, and the only way you can do that is by making bets. Not all are going to pay off, but you can be smarter and more selectively aggressive about the ones you make. And eventually, the more bets you play, the more chances you're going to create for yourself to succeed.
Fantastic. I have to say, one of my favorite statements in the book, Make Change for Work for You, is that you say that success depends on your ability to be ingenious, not a genius. And I think that's so true for today in this age of creativity. So I'd love to hear more about that, how to succeed today takes an ability to be ingenious, not a genius.
Well, if you think about it, right, in pop culture, what happens is we celebrate all these guys like Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg and the innovators and the entrepreneurs, right? But if you think about our education system and the way our professional working system is set up, not a lot of them encourage dynamic thinking or entrepreneurial thinking or encourage people to take many chances and experiment, right? Most of it is simply, how can we memorize some answers and spit them back? And really what we're talking about, the reason that you see so many self-made successes outstripping traditional successes, class valedictorians and the like, is because they're constantly willing to change and experiment. They're a little bit more resilient, right? We live in a fast-moving world where best business practices are constantly changing. The tools, the trends that are out there are constantly shifting. I mean, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, Facebook, Twitter, Vine, Instagram, most of these things were either brand new or didn't exist, right? So somebody had to adapt and capitalize on them. And really what we're talking about when it comes to being a little bit more ingenious is being a little bit more improvisational and able to figure out a strategy on the fly is key in life and business, because you can't simply memorize what worked in the past and continue to do that over and over again in a changing world. And what's interesting is actually we see examples, and we talk about this in the book, self-made successes who will create their own education programs. So to give you a good example, one woman we interviewed, Amber Case, she was an anthropology and sociology major. She graduated in the middle of the Great Recession. She didn't have a lot of business experience, connections, or contacts. She was kind of dubious, didn't want to go back to graduate school because it could cost a lot of money in student loans. She wasn't sure how much benefit it was going to create for her as a working professional. So instead what she does, she actually, while people are desperate to find full-time jobs, she turns down full-time employment purposefully and says, I'm going to work about 20 hours a week. And what I'm going to do with the rest of my time is I'm going to devote it to completing a series of self-directed goals. I'm going to create my own independent study program. I'm going to learn how to throw conferences, put on events. Maybe I'm going to try and create my own app, start some other entrepreneurial ventures. Because what she realized is whether she succeeded or failed, and she took 5 years, she decided I'm going to pursue all these goals to fill in gaps in my skill set, right? Maybe I'm not a great networker. Maybe I'm that organized. Maybe I don't know how to put these events together, but I'm going to learn. Because what she realizes, the value of the contacts, the connections, the experiences, the insights, they're going to far outweigh what she could have earned at a low-paying job, right? You know, most of her colleagues took whatever jobs presented themselves. Not a big paycheck, not a lot of growth potential, but instead she decides she's going to invest in herself. And what happens is not only does she complete every single one of those goals ahead of schedule, not only does she increase her value in the eyes of employers and gain experience and insights far beyond those of her peers, but she actually manages to start a successful startup, become a huge community thought leader, and the youngest member ever of her college's board of trustees. So it's entirely possible to create your own pathway to success. And in fact, I would argue that you have no choice to do that today when the corporate ladder is becoming so increasingly rickety, overcrowded, and unreliable. You know, that piece, that resilience, and that willingness to be a little bit more ingenious is key. And again, you know, this all goes back to some of these slight shifts in thinking we talked about before. You know, it's not really about having more resources. It's about how resourceful you can be and how better equipped you are to put some of those resources together and use them in new and novel ways.
Wow, well, I heard that's a great story of ingenuity. That's really cool. You also, you reference an article from Fast Company, two really cool terms that I had never heard before. One was generation flux. Mm-hmm. Like these are, you define them, or they're defined in the article, as resilient individuals whose diversity and talents easily adapt. And then the other were T-shaped individuals. People who enjoy mastery in one area, but also possess knowledge in other fields. I've never heard either of those two terms used. So valuable. And I'd love to hear more how you feel about generation flux and T-shaped individuals.
Yeah, it's a shame more people don't know about them. A generation flux is essentially not an age group. It's a psychographic, if that makes sense. It's a group of people who think along the same lines, and you can be of any age, of any background. It's basically individuals who are more resilient and more able to change. And what they do is, as they go through life and create their own path through the job market and through the career world, basically they pick up a number of flexible or very elastic skills along the way, like the ability to better communicate and express themselves, the ability to market or design products. And these universal elastic skills can essentially be used in a variety of different job roles. So basically, it's almost like they're playing parkour with their career. Their single biggest strength is that they have the ability to pick up new skills. They've learned the ability to learn, if that makes sense. And so as they go through life, as they chart their own career course, they're constantly looking for springboards to opportunity in ways that they can put different pieces of the puzzle together. So, you know, they may, for example, take background information or skills that they picked up in a career in law or even in the scientific world, and then later in life remix them as they become the executive director of a nonprofit, right? Or you may see other individuals who had a background in marketing and communications and therefore were able to think about, well, how can I parlay my career into a second act as a writer self-publishing books? And when we talk about the T-shaped individuals, I think what we're talking about there is, you know, we oftentimes say specialization and subject matter expertise is key. But I think when we talk about that T-shape, you know, that piece of it is the depth in one area. But you also have to have breadth, right? You have to be conversational in a variety of other areas because, you know, what happens if you, I mean, unless you're a surgeon, right, or an aerospace engineer, in which case that subject matter expertise is probably going to be pretty rare and hard to come by. You know, what happens if you can become easily replaced or the area you choose to specialize in becomes out of date, right? I mean, you know, once upon a time, it was probably a very key skill to be able to do a lot with America Online and Prodigy. And now that we have switched to Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and some others, you know, I'm not entirely sure that subject matter expertise in those areas enables you to move in different directions, right? So really what we're talking about is in your career, yes, you need to dig deep. You need to have mastery in a certain area, but really you need to have some escape routes, some conversational ability, the ability to move into other areas, right? Or be able to take your skills and parlay them into other fields so that you're not pigeonholed, right? So if the walls of that tunnel ever start caving in, you got some escape routes.
That's perfect. I have to say, being a proponent of our community of creative warriors not being pigeonholed by trying to fit into a niche, I really loved that part of the book when you said that the age of specialization is dead. Do you have more to say? I mean, what gives you the feel that specialization is dead? Is this something you've just seen evolve in the business climate today?
Well, I think what you've seen is that, you know, again, except in those certain rare professions, the emergency room, right, or sometimes in the war planning room, or I should say the strategic planning room, outside of that, what's happened is the job market has now become globalized, right? And what we've also seen is that you have an increasingly large pool of candidates who are increasingly skilled, but also willing to work for less. And may actually have more hands-on experience replacing each successive generation, which means that job security is shrinking with each passing day. And it's a pretty safe bet that if what you can do can be easily outsourced, and even some of these highly specialized skills can be readily outsourced to other candidates, you know, you're going to be pretty easy to replace at some point. If it can be done better, faster, cheaper, you can probably rest assured that it will. And of course, couple that with the fact that, you know, as a society, cultural advances in communications and IT are moving at an exponential clip. They're evolving at a much faster rate, more frequently than we've ever seen at any point in history. In fact, the next 10 years are going to bring more change than you've seen in the last 10,000, right? So if that's the case, specializing is kind of the recipe for disaster in some areas, right? So, you know, outside of those very specific examples that we talked about, I think it's pretty hard to hang on to that specialization, to hang on to that mastery, especially if the area that you have mastered is prone to changing, right? So, you know, on the one hand, it's important to very quickly communicate differentiation at a glance. And the worry is that if you are not specialized, if you're trying to be too many things to too many people, it can be very hard to communicate your strengths. But at the same time, by diversifying, that's how you create some sense of flexibility and future-proofing, because you allow yourself the ability to move into different areas. And maybe some of the skills that you have mastered will carry over into those areas, but you're not necessarily defined by a single label. So, you know, it's a challenging tightrope to walk sometimes. But I think really what we're talking about is finding ways to create your own flexibility, your own resiliency. Because at the end of the day, if you look at some of the statistics, most people are going to have about 11 different careers throughout their lives. And most jobs are only going to last about 4 years on average. So if that's the case, you always got to be thinking about what's the next move and where can I go? Where would be a natural fit?
Fantastic. And it's actually, it plays nicely into one of the other highlights, I think, in the book was that I extracted from it was to never be without, you say, never be without a plan and never rely on one. Really speaks to that flexibility and adaptability you're speaking about. All right. So nonetheless, change can be scary. And of course, what we need is courage. So I'd love to offer our community, as I said, I would, a little training in courage, because you do a fantastic job in the book in laying out several bullet points of characteristics that would be necessary to have courage. And I would just love to go through several of those if you're willing to play along.
Sure. Why not? Sounds like a great move. Let's do it.
Exactly. All right. So this is a training in courage. One, as you say, you have to be willing to take smart risks. So if you'll just comment on each of these bullet points as we go along, that'd be great.
Okay, no problem. So if I were to take a smart risk, let's think about this, right? Maybe I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to start a specific business. Does that mean that I need to quit my stable 9-to-5 job? Not necessarily. Some of the off hours experimenting and trying my new business, maybe launch a website, some search engine optimization, see if I can sign up some clients on the side and build a little bit of a stable base before I go in whole hog. So it doesn't mean you necessarily need to take out that $20,000 loan and immediately open the bakery, right? Maybe a better idea, for example, would be to see, could you sell some baked goods that you've created in the off hours to some of your friends? Maybe some of them are working professionals. They may be able to bring in some orders from their offices. And as you build that stable base, then maybe slowly transition over.
All right. You say also to be courageous, you need to step out of your comfort zone.
Yes. Much easier said than done. That's for certain. But
yes.
You know, so a simple example there would be, hey, the next time you're at work and somebody says, we've got a new program going on, or maybe we want to provide some training in a specific area. Not a lot of people have it. Maybe that's as easy as simply raising your hand and saying, yes, I will volunteer. I will get the training. I will lead up this new initiative. I will plan this new event. It doesn't mean I will do a fantastic job off the bat. You'll know that inside. You don't have to tell anybody that. But you try, you learn, and as you do it, you get better. And the next time you do it, I promise you, you will be even better. And the fact that you are actually trying and doing this is going to put you at a competitive advantage over time.
Correct. All right. Excellent. And you also say that you need to be always learning and trying something new.
Oh, yes. So, okay. I'll give you a great example, right? So we produce a lot of ebooks, a lot of tip sheets, a lot of online promotional pieces here, you know, a lot of inspirational material. And let me tell you, right, I suck as an artist. I can't draw to save my life. But you know what? When the chance came to sign up for 6-7 hour Photoshop seminars so I could learn a few basics, guess what, right? Sometimes you have to say, well, you know, maybe it's going to cost me some money. I'm not necessarily going to get a certain amount of work done this day, right? It's time that I have to block out on my schedule. But maybe the fact that I've learned to pick up some of those skills can save me more in the end. May not need to be outsourced. Maybe I can create some of those pieces myself, do some of the layouts, save myself a lot more time in the end because I'm not having to send it out to an artist and wait for it to come back. And of course, you know, I'm trying to pick up things like WordPress and web design as well. You know, even I like to joke, I'm kind of a bit of an old fart at this point. An old dog can pick up some new tricks. And even if I don't wind up doing it directly, at least I'll be able to communicate better with the web designers and graphic designers that we do use. But, you know, sometimes you have to say, look at the big picture and say, well, you know, maybe it sucks blocking that time out from your schedule this day, but it can save you a lot more time in the end.
Cool. And this next one I thought was really, really cool was that you said to be courageous, you don't want to jump to conclusions.
Yes, this is the big challenge, right? We all make big assumptions about what's going to happen as opposed to actually interpreting what is happening and reacting to it. So that doesn't mean that you don't plan ahead, but it does mean that you have to create a little bit more flexibility, right? Don't put all your ducks behind one specific strategy. You gather as much intelligence as you can, do as much homework as possible about the challenge that you face, and make a decision, then act. Then based on the feedback that you get, you react and you change your strategy to be more successful. You do not sit still. You do not assume the worst. Of course, it helps to plan for the worst sometimes. They always say, you know, plan for the worst, hope for the best. But essentially what you're doing is creating a scenario where you're learning as you go and you're constantly preparing yourself and you're constantly prepared and able to change based on what the world throws at you. So it's easier said than done. It's another one of those challenging scenarios. But really, at the end of the day, you know, it's just, you know, oftentimes what happens is we default to worst case scenario and we freak out and we do nothing. I like to go, I come from the school of thought of, okay, well, you know, if you automatically default to worst case scenario, start planning for it, realize that you're still standing, and chances are whatever you're going to get, whatever you're going to deal with, is going to be a little bit better. So deal with it as it comes.
Terrific. I love this next one as well, because I have to say, I think this is just a common trait of successful people. You say to fixate on solutions, not problems.
That's right. Get the job done, baby. Yeah, it's, sorry, I don't mean to be glib again, but this is one of those where it's like, a lot of people like to sit around and bitch and moan and complain. And I come from the school of thought, like, if something is wrong and you don't like it, change it. What would you do differently? And what will it take to get that done? So one of the great things is when we started writing some of our previous books, a lot of it, I would say the inspiration simply came from the fact that it was like, hey, you know, there's a million children out there using high-tech devices. It's part of childhood. Why is nobody actually writing a book about high-tech parenting? So I went out in the off hours, was working a full-time job, started penning a few things, and after a few months, the Modern Parents Guide High-Tech Parenting series was born. So, you know, I could have fixated on the, oh, crap, I don't have a publisher. I don't know, will anybody want this? But I said, hey, look, you know, there's a problem out there. I can provide a solution. So I created it. I bridged the gap. A lot of people were interested in the end, but there was no way of knowing up front, right? But, you know, you see a problem. You fix it. You do what it takes to fix it. You don't wait for permission. You don't wait to ask somebody. You just take care of it. And if you keep doing that, you'd be amazed how many doors can open.
That's great. Our audio actually blipped there for just a second. So can you give us the name of the book again?
It is the Modern Parents Guide series. It's actually a best-selling high-tech parenting series. And to my knowledge, it is the first, which is kind of scary if you think about how many kids are growing up with those high-tech devices in hand. We should be having more conversations.
Right. Well, that's why I wanted you to say it again, because I've never heard anything about that. And that's really valuable. All right. So, Scott, in a moment, I'm going to ask you our discovery round questions. So while you're preparing yourself for these thought-provoking questions, we're going to hear a brief message and we'll be right back. If you're in business doing something you're truly passionate about, my new training and coaching program, The Creative Warrior Unleashed, will rock your world. The Creative Warrior Unleashed is a 7-week program where you overcome the 7 core conflicts that stop creative entrepreneurs in their tracks. I know this journey. I've lived it myself. These are the 7 conflicts that are common amongst creative thinkers and must be overcome to achieve your highest level of success. You'll learn why your so-called lack of focus is your greatest asset. How to create more flow in your business so that being in business is easier than you ever imagined. How to create a clear brand identity so that you are easily found by your perfect clients. And create a diversified business that excites you and rewards you with multiple streams of income. In just 7 weeks, you can gain the clarity that you need for your business success. Simply go to creativewarriorunleashed.com to find out when the next 7-week program begins. The Creative Warrior Unleashed, the path to success for the creative warrior. Check it out, creativewarriorunleashed.com. All right, Scott, it's time for our discovery round questions. Question number 1, what drives you crazy?
When things don't get done, when I see something in the world that seems so obvious, that's such an easy fix, and people don't do anything about it. It's probably the number one biggest motivating factor for getting stuff done. So do not let hesitancy hold you back. If you see a problem, fix it.
Terrific. Second question is, looking back, what's something that you can't believe you did for your career?
Oh, I can't believe that I went out on my own and went solo. There was a point where I had a nice, stable 9-to-5 job, like we had mentioned, and lo and behold, I decided that I was going to make a career out of writing about video games. It's a lot easier to take that plunge when you're early 20s and you do not have kids and you do not have a mortgage and all sorts of things. And looking back, you wonder, boy, what was I thinking? But it seems to have worked out.
So when you were starting out, what challenge did you face that you didn't expect?
I think the number one challenge that all of us face when we start out that we do not expect is that it's going to take much longer to succeed than anybody ever tells you. So oftentimes you are led to believe in this fable of overnight success, right? And sometimes we believe that success may take a while to come, but we don't realize just quite how long it's going to take. So anything you're going to do, assume it's going to be 3 times as hard, 10 times as painful, and take about 15 times as long, but do it anyway.
And do it anyway. I love that. All right. So the last question is, imagine you are sitting around a campfire and out of the darkness appears your greatest enemy, which does not have to be a person. What inner warrior inside yourself do you call upon and why?
I'm not sure you call upon it. I think you just act. And if you've been doing it correctly all along, you've essentially been preparing yourself, right? So that's really what we're talking about when it comes to teaching ourselves to be brave, is to constantly make those good decisions, spur of the moment, snap decisions, And the only way you're going to be prepared to do that, right, it's not like, you know, you suddenly, somebody tries to mug you and take your car, like you're going to learn karate overnight and be able to run some jujitsu on them. You have to have prepared, you have to train, you have to be ready to deal with it. But if you're ready to deal with it, well, you can deal with whatever the future throws.
Terrific. So Warrior, Scott has been super generous and is offering us an ebook called The 101 Ways to Make Better Business Decisions to Think Smarter. So that should be really helpful for everybody to embrace change. So again, everyone can go to creative-warriors.com where you can not only get Scott's generous offer, but also all the offers from previous guests as well. Scott, thank you so much for being here. It's really been a pleasure, and thank you for setting us straight on the course of change.
My pleasure. Thanks again, Jeff.
Thank you. And that's it for now, Warriors. Let's go out, create, serve, and be prosperous.